ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय श्रीमद् भागवतम् Canto 11, Chapter 6, Text 12, Translation and Commentary by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Paryushtayata vibho vanamalayeyam Sanspardhini bhagavati pratipatni vachchrihi Yah Supranita Mamu Ahanamada Dano Bhuyat Sadang Grira Shubhashaya Dhuma Ketu Paryashtayatava Vibhovanamalayam Sanspardhini bhagavati pratipatni vachchrihi Yah supranita manu yarhanam adadanna Bhuyat sadangira shubhashaya dhuma ketuhu Translation. O Almighty Lord, you are so kind to your servants that you have accepted the withered flower garland that we have placed on your chest. Since the goddess of fortune makes her abode on your transcendental chest, she will undoubtedly become agitated like a jealous co-wife upon seeing our offering also dwelling there. Yet you are so merciful that you neglect your eternal consort Lakshmi and accept our offering as most excellent worship. O merciful Lord, may your lotus feet always act as a blazing fire to consume the inauspicious desires within our hearts. What's that making so much noise? Is that a fan? Which fan is that? In Bhagavad Gita, chapter 9, 10, 6, 26, it is stated, Patrang pushpam palam tauyam yome bhaktya prayachati tadaham bhaktyupahritam ashnami prayatatmanaha. Lord Krishna gratefully and happily accepts even the most meager offering from his loving devotee. Lord Krishna is conquered by the love of his pure devotees just as a father is easily conquered by the most insignificant gift offered by his loving child. Unless a transcendentalist completely gives up the impersonal conception of life, he cannot make such a loving offering to the Lord. The process of meditation upon the supersoul within the heart, called Dhyana Yoga, is not as pleasing to Krishna as Bhakti Yoga or devotional service, because in Dhyana or meditation, the yogi is trying to satisfy himself and not the Lord by attaining mystic powers. Similarly, in order to acquire material benefits from the Lord, ordinary people worship God in temples, churches, and mosques. But one who desires actual spiritual perfection must be enlivened to always chant and hear the glories of the Lord. Such devotional enthusiasm is motivated by love of Godhead and is devoid of any selfish expectation. The Lord is so kind that he neglects his own eternal consort, Lakshmi, and gives preference to his humble devotee, just as a man will neglect the loving embrace of his wife when his affectionate child approaches him with a gift. Srila Jiva Goswami has pointed out that any garland worn by the Lord cannot be faded because all of the Lord's personal paraphernalia is completely transcendental and spiritually opulent. Similarly, there is no possibility that mundane jealousy could appear in the character of the goddess of fortune, who is as transcendental as Lord Krishna himself. Therefore, the statements of the demigods are to be understood as humorous words inspired by intense love of Godhead. The demigods enjoy the protection of Lakshmi and ultimately of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, and due to their confidence in their loving relationship with the Lord and his consort, they feel free to speak in a joking way. There is a similar statement quoted in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita from a mundane drama that a lover accepts the a garland, even though muddied, from his lover, because even though it's unsuitable being muddied for offering, but is accepted because it's offered with love. So this is this verse that we're reading today. This is reaching up toward the higher levels of exchange of rasa. This is spoken by the demigods approaching Lord Krishna, who is Dwarkadhish, the Lord of Dwarka. So in Dwarka there's much open and friendly affection between Krishna and his devotees, many of whom are his family members. That may be there to some extent in Vaikuntha also. We learn from Brihad Bhagavatamrita that too much open love and friendship for the Supreme Lord is not much appreciated in Vaikuntha. When Gopakumar was brought into the presence of Vaikunthanath, the Lord of Vaikuntha, he was warned in advance, "Now you just behave yourself." But naturally, because he's a sahajiya, means he has sahaj bhav, his natural feelings for the Lord, he ran to embrace him on seeing him. He's a shuddha sahajiya, means he has pure natural feelings for the Lord. So to be a sahajiya is not a bad thing, but to be a prakrita sahajiya, or of someone who's takes his mundane feelings to be spiritual, that is not desired. Now, there is also the conjugal exchange in Vaikuntha, not parakya, swakya. That's the specialty of Vrindavan. That is exchanged between Vaikunthanath and Lakshmi. But that's not very much discussed there. Just like the children, they, when they're a little grown up, they may know that their father and mother have conjugal relationship, but it's nothing for them to nothing for the children to discuss. It's beyond their level of maryada, the limit of their proper behavior to discuss or even think about such things. Now, here in this area, your Annamacharya has sung songs about the loving affairs of Lakshmi and Vaikunthanath. That must have been around the same time as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So, did anyone investigate that, the timeline?
Little gap,
Annamacharya came after or before? After, yeah, so that makes more sense. But in Dwarka, Krishna, same Vaikunthanath, when he's Dwarkanath, it's more obvious that he is fond of women, as he has 16,108 wives. And if you think that's a lot, well, in Vrindavan it's unlimited. Unlimited number of girlfriends. So this is, as Srila Prabhupada points... No, it's actually not Srila Prabhupada. It's taken from the previous acharyas. This is beyond the impersonalist conception. And this is also beyond the conception of those who consider God to be only great. God is great. It is an axiomatic statement. There's no real need to say it. It's not only axiomatic, it's almost a tautology, which means that you don't really say, you know what that means, a tautology? It means you don't really say something about a microphone if you just describe what it is. A microphone is part of the apparatus that amplifies sound. You don't really say anything about it. So to say God is great, it's like saying the sky is blue. Well, the sky is not always blue, but anyway, you get the idea. Water is wet. We don't really say anything about it, because if he's not great, he's not God. So Srila Prabhupada often stressed that we should not simply say that God is great, but we should try to understand how God is great. Generally, people think that God's greatness is his power to dominate everything and his power to give us what we want. Another axiom, God is good. And people think, well, God is good because he gives me money, solves my back pain, and so on. But his greatness and his goodness are more seen in his loving exchanges with his devotees than in his awarding material benedictions. People think that God cannot be a person. Some people think that God cannot be a person. Because if they think he's a person, he must do something wrong. Everyone does something wrong. Or he must displease someone. The thief is praying, "Oh God, help me to burgle this house." And the householder thinks, "Oh God, please protect me from thieves." So he has to displease someone. So then God can't be a person. But they got their reasoning upside down. They got their vichar ulta. Ulta vichar. Viparita vichar. That we are meant for pleasing him, not that he is meant for pleasing us. Then we, with such an understanding, we can begin to approach Vaikunthanath. We're in a concept where we can live very happily and peacefully by the power of Vaikunthanath, appreciating him. But here we see in Dwaraka the conception has gone further, that the demigods are making a joke, and not actually at Krishna's expense, at Lakshmi's expense. You can't joke with God. As he comes out in the parade, a big king looking very grand, and everyone standing there very solemnly. There's his chief minister standing next to him, and chief minister sees something funny and goes like that to the king and says, "Hey, look at that, that's funny," and they both start laughing. You can't do that in public when you're supposed to look very solemn. Srila Prabhupada told a story once. It's a totally mundane story. Just like I started by speaking about the muddied garland, which is taken, I believe it's from a Bhavabhuti play. It's a mundane play. But because it reflects, it's mundane, but it demonstrates mundane rasa, by which we can have a glimpse into the spiritual rasa. So this is a story, and I'm paraphrasing it, as probably Srila Prabhupada himself paraphrased it. When Srila Prabhupada was being educated in the British educational system in Calcutta, the name of William Gladstone must have been featured prominently in his history classes, because he was one of the two great British statesmen during the rule of Queen Victoria, which Srila Prabhupada was born just at the end of. No, not just at the end. Yeah, just at the end. So Srila Prabhupada told the story that one man had an appointment to meet William Gladstone in Gladstone's office. This is Gladstone, the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland, and Rule Britannia, the great... he's the Prime Minister of the British Empire. It's a very big post, a lot of responsibility. And you can imagine that he has a lot of work to do. And he's a highly respectable person. So this man had an appointment to meet him in his office. And he waited outside the office. The time of his appointment came. It went. Time went on and on and on. And the man thought, well, he must be very busy in some very important work. That's why he's not called me at the time given. He became very curious as to what historic work Gladstone was engaged in. He became very curious and he thought, let me just have a little look and see. So he very quietly opened the door. Actually, he couldn't do this because there'd be guards and everything. But anyway, it's a story. He opened the door very slowly and just looked inside. You know the story. And he looked inside and he saw there William Gladstone, the Prime Minister of the mighty British Empire. He was down on his hands and knees on the floor with his grandson on his back, whipping him as if he was a horse. So here we have the most powerful man in the world at the time with all so many pressing matters of state and so many important people to see him. But he just forgot all about it because he was absorbed in loving exchanges with his grandson, in which he had forgotten all his solemnity and dignity, just to share some funny exchange with his grandson out of love. So if we are to accept the personality of Godhead, then we should accept that he is great and good, not just in a solemn and dignified way, but in a loving, pleasing way also. In a pleasing way in which he himself forgets his power and greatness and becomes pleased to have loving exchanges with his devotees. In which he takes an insignificant, he acts as if insignificant to reciprocate with his devotees. Here we see the demigods, they're joking with Krishna. It's a mild joke. But in Vrindavan, it can get to the extent of abusing him, fighting with him, tying him up, rejecting him, get out of here, I'll never see you again. This is very difficult for the solemn religionists to accept. And it is also much open to be misunderstood by neophyte devotees who project their mundane sentiments onto Krishna and think it's fully spiritual. For instance, they may think, well, Yashoda Mai, she treats Krishna as her son, so I'll also treat Krishna as my son. I heard one case many years ago of a woman who had the deity of Krishna and she treated him just like her son. She would, in the evening, this woman, she would watch her favorite TV programs, and she would put Krishna on a nice seat next to her, and together they would watch TV. At some level, Krishna may accept such mixed devotion. The demigods are being described in this verse. So Krishna appears among the demigods. He appears as Upendra, the small Indra, the younger brother of Indra, Vamanadev. So, Vamanadev lives among the demigods and they take him as one of their, to be one of their family members. So the dealings may be seemingly mundane. There's a similar account of Madan Mohan, the deity of Sanatana Goswami. Previously he was living in Mathura Chobe home. Chobe is a very common name among Mathura Brahmanas. He was just living like a son of the. He was playing with the other children. Sanatana Goswami said, "You can't play with him like that." He took him away and worshipped him. Obviously, Srila Prabhupada, before he came to the West, he had a whole life before that. He had his friends and his family members. He was doing business, so he discussed business with people. His godbrothers thought that he's a good devotee, householder devotee. They didn't think of him to be anything super special. Clearly, when he was doing business, he did business. If he had to discuss some business deal, he wouldn't just start, just forget all that and just start talking Bhagavad Gita. He would discuss, okay, I'll supply you this much medicine and you give me this much price and I'll give you this credit. And he discussed all these things. Now, we shouldn't conclude from this that at any point in his life, Srila Prabhupada was a mundane person. But he did maintain relationships with people in a way that they considered him to be another person, pious man, friendly man, whatever. But they related to him as another person of this world. Now, the gopis in Vrindavan do that with Krishna in pure love of Krishna. And less perfect devotees may do so also, but they project their mundane sentiments onto Krishna. Just like the woman who kept her deity of Gopal next to her, she watched TV. She may have had her other children and she considered Gopal to be another of her children. She wanted to treat him like that. So it's an imitation of the pure Vatsalya Rasa of Yashoda Mai. In which she has her mundane feelings for her sons and daughters, and she thinks of Krishna in the same way. So what is the difference between Yashoda Mai's feelings for Krishna and that of a woman who treats Krishna as one of her sons, but she only has a mundane outlook? What is the difference? Who can say? Any thoughts? Anyone? Yayata mam prapadyante. Krishna reciprocates. Yeah, but the mother of the ordinary mother, she feels she doesn't think philosophically. But she thinks, I'm giving my full motherly affection to Krishna. Now we might say, well, Mother Yashoda, if we offer that someone in pure consciousness, they understand that Krishna is God, well, that doesn't apply to Mother Yashoda either. There is a statement in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. It refers to Ramananda Shuddha Shakya. The phrase is used Shuddha Shakya, or pure, in this case, Sakya Rasa. It means there's no mundane conception in there. a person of mundane outlook may also worship Krishna with some apparent spontaneity, but their consciousness is very much absorbed in how I will enjoy this material world. And it may appear that Mother Yashoda is just another ordinary woman. She's concerned with looking after her family, and then as the wife of Nanda Maharaj, she has a maternal feeling toward all the inhabitants of Vrindavan. But in Vrindavan, everyone's focus is fully Krishna, without anything else. Whereas in material consciousness, there is what I want plus what Krishna wants. And due to lack of proper guidance, this particular woman thought, well, I like to watch TV, so Krishna must also like to watch TV. She doesn't know what Krishna wants. However, that feeling, even if it's mixed with mundane feelings or is predominantly in a mundane mood, that can become purified. And particularly in the Vallabh Sampradaya, where the worship of baby Krishna at home is prominent, that's a half sentence, there is the process of worshipping Krishna, but all day, making all one's daily activities at home completely centered on Krishna. What does he like to eat at this time? You have to provide singing songs for him. Now you sing the song of him going to the forest with the cows. At night you sing some lullaby. So in this way the whole family is centered on Krishna, and even the man is working, earning money. This is mostly merchant community, but the idea is that then we'll buy some more nice things, some for Krishna, some dresses, we'll make some, and like this, everything is centered on Krishna. Even they have to arrange the marriages of their sons and daughters, which might seem completely mundane. But they'll be interested to marry them into a similar family so that they can continue serving Krishna at home as they've been trained to do in their childhood. So Krishna appears in this world mostly for the benefit of the devotees who are not pure devotees, because the pure devotees, they don't need to come to this world either. He comes to especially to pick up those who have some inclination to serve him but are still materially entangled. But this process of offering our mundane feelings to Krishna, and that they should become purified, that has to be very much with the understanding of what Krishna actually likes. Otherwise, it's very easy to become degraded to the platform of a Prakriti Sahajiya and think that our mundane feelings for Krishna, that is completely spiritual. So we have to learn to discriminate between the mundane and the spiritual, and not think that because we like something, then Krishna should like it. And to understand what is Krishna's position and what is our position. Because Krishna can enjoy unlimited numbers of gopis, but if we try to enjoy even one woman, then we become lost from spiritual life. So there are many important points of understanding the subtleties of the psychology of the personality of Godhead, which you might think, well, who are we to subject God to our psychological examination? But he presents himself openly here in Srimad Bhagavatam. Therefore, Bhagavatam is meant for those who are nirmatsaranam satam, those who have no envy of Krishna. They can appreciate Krishna, the person, as he is. Others will misunderstand, or they may overstep their level of eligibility. The The demigods can joke with Krishna, but they shouldn't go too far. The way that, sometimes the way that Indra thinks that Krishna is an ordinary person, he thinks that, and the gopis also think that, but the way that Indra thinks it becomes offensive. When Indra thinks that Krishna is an ordinary person and he stopped my worship, so let's flood Vrindavan with rain, Indra's way of thinking is not nourishing to bhakti. It's just the opposite. It's offensive. But when a gopi says to Krishna, you get out from here, don't ever come to see me again, that is at the topmost level of pure love of Krishna. So this is at a very high level of God consciousness, which Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to inform us about and to invite us into. In the meantime, atyahara prayasas cha prajalpa niyamagraha janasangas chaloliam cha shadbhya bhakti pranashyati. We should consider the import of such verses. Don't eat too much, don't collect too much, don't talk too much, don't talk nonsense, don't make mundane endeavors, don't associate with mundane people, don't be greedy for mundane achievements, and so on. And keep an eye out for cobwebs in the temple. Just like here, you can see. Elsewhere in the complex, there are some spectacular artistic work by spiders. So, Hare Krishna. Any